And we're a go. Okay. So just to finish up that little bit of talking, you know, the shift to having your own business from not ever having a business, let alone a coaching business, is quite significant. And the one other thing that I want to point to for other people who are making that shift is the recognition of this. You must add in the social that you take for granted by working in a company. If you've never had your own business, self-employed, and you're only working in your own, out of your own house, et cetera, one of the things that you take for granted that nobody points to is the fact that you simply see people every day. You get out of the house, okay? And what we don't realize is that what that does to us if we don't have that there. But because we take it for granted in a company, we start to, at a certain point in time, feel lonely in our own business. And it starts to undermine the business's ability to draw our attention because we're so busy going, I don't know if I want to do this. I'm going to be all alone. I'm sitting in my office. Oh, no. So you have to find ways to get your butt out there. You know, have meetings, have coffees, have lunches, have whatever. Go talk. Go network if you like it. You know, go to chapter meetings or whatever it is that's available there. But get that social component that is so valuable for the stimulation and provocation of it. And it's not the same on the internet. Yes, you can have conversations on the internet. Yes, you can chat via Facebook and post, and Lord knows I do a whole bunch of that. It doesn't replace being in the physical presence of other human beings. So just a heads up on that one before we get going.
Thanks.
You're welcome. That was one that it took me a while to even notice that that was what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I was starting to show up to my own office in my own apartment with this kind of, and I was having great client conversations and all of that, and it feels like there's connection, and there is. And it's different.
Mm-hmm.
In the same way that being at a sporting event is different from watching it on television, being a part of that collective energy, being in the movie theater watching Life of Pi is different than watching it at home on a smaller screen, because it's a collective energy that's useful and very human. So here we are, session two, provoke, evoke, or go home, or also known as masterful provocation. So,
Mike, this is Steve. I just want to say one thing.
Yes.
If this coaching career doesn't work out for you, I think you could be a movie reviewer. Because every time you recommend a movie, I go see it and I love it.
You know, at one point I thought of putting together, you know, I was living back east and there was a Siskel and Ebert thing and lots of reviewers and things like that. And one point I did have the thought of putting together the Average Joe movie reviews. You know,
yeah.
From the point of view of I simply write from my experience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't write from analyzing the movie from, not that I couldn't, because I did study movie making, but I just write from what happens when I go. And in its own way, going back to the coaching business piece, that's one of the most powerful pieces we have for building our business, which is people having an experience of you. And especially if it's a provocative one in nature. You know, if they feel like something in them has been provoked or evoked out of just having an experience of you, they do what Steve is just talking about, which is they recommend you from their heart and their truth, which is an advertising you can't pay for. So thanks, Steve. Thanks.
Welcome.
So, the key agilities for masterful provocation, and I'll go into why I selected this word, not the least of which is that I like the idea of, in my own evolutionary coaching program, of not being competent at something. You know, some of you have heard me say this before. I don't know, do I really want to be competent? that sounds like a good thing, and yet I'm even willing to provoke the language of that and saying somehow being competent doesn't quite have a level of mastery associated with the word. Do I really want to be competent at asking questions? Or do I want to have an agility with a powerful inquiry? That one calls me. Being competent says I can do it at the same level as everybody else can. Yeah, I'm competent at hammering a nail. Having agility at it, very interesting. So that's where we're playing today, the agilities for masterful provocation. Because before we get into the what to poke things, we need to focus on where we're poking from and what are the mechanics of how that happens. So here's what we're up to. Quick pulse check on whatever experiments you decided out of the last session. The key agilities, there are 9 in the whole perspective, but we don't necessarily need to focus on any more than these particular 4 at this point in time. You know, what they are, what they aren't. Subtracting frictors, and I want to go to this word again just to remind people what that is. A frictor is a factor of friction that slows down, impedes, or even blocks our ability to move forward at the, not just the pace in our life, but with the kind of experience we want to have in our life. And I've found that a subtractive process is much more powerful than an additive process. And the image I like to use is that of a motorboat. You know, if somebody wants the motorboat to go faster, well, one of the first things that people would normally do is we put a big, more powerful engine on the back. And that might well do it, but it might stress out all the joints because maybe that boat isn't built for that level of engine. However, that can be a very expensive proposition. It could be less expensive simply to strip off all the barnacles and subtract those things that are causing friction in its natural moving forward at a quicker pace. So that's the kind of image of it. So we're then going to take a look at just beginning the process, and it's going to be an ongoing process of subtracting the frictors, the factors of friction, to presence. All of these agilities I've observed have a natural, organic presence in everyone. These are already here. These are not something you have to get good at. You're already naturally brilliant at these, and there is some interference, some frictures that may be inhibiting their optimal expression for you. And this is the image of going into the David inside the stone, chipping away all of the stone with the recognition that the David is already in there. The magnificence of that sculpture is already present, and all we're going to do is chip it away to just reveal what's there, which is, from the point of view of working with clients, it's a great frame to have as well. If we frame it that there is genius in there and that they're not living from it, now it's a completely different process interacting with them than it is trying to upgrade their intelligence level. So we'll look at presence, sensing acuity, provocative inquiry, saying what is, check in with where you are, and then talk about it all being about heart. So here's the pulse check. What's your experiment? What, if any, experiment out of last session did you come up with? Who are you without some of the things that you may think have identified you? Or what are your challenges in moving forward in a naturally provocative way? And let's just kind of stir things up a little bit. Who wants to speak first?
Well, I'll go first. This is Margie.
Mm-hmm.
And first of all, I want to say, and I know I told you I was going to say this, my 2 most favorite people are on this call with me today, and I am thrilled to death that Shirley and Sherry are here on this call because they are just absolutely my most favorite people. So So anyway, I loved listening to the call. I listened to it yesterday and then found myself taking notes while I was listening to it, you know, getting ready to pack up and come back home. What really stood out for me is I think it was probably David was on last week's call. Is that right? Or was it Steve?
It would be Steve.
Okay. So when you had talked about with the big shift for Steve where, you know, his moving from his value being his experience and expertise, or at least this is the way I wrote it down, is to the essence of who we are and, you know, really allowing ourselves to move away from who we previously might consider who we are. And I know that's huge for me because a big part of my belief of why people come to me is because of my expertise. So I've really been sort of mulling that around in my head and who I am without it. Well, you know, on the one hand, it's like, holy crap, who would I be without it? On the other hand, my ultimate goal would be just to be an incredible coach where, like, you know, and I think at one time you said this somewhere, I don't know, in like 5 minutes, they're going, oh, they've got this huge transformation going on in their lives.
Yes.
Of course, the challenge is letting all that go. So I guess that's, you know, doing more of the removing of, you know, the beliefs, I think, really.
That's a great way to put it and a great frame to look at it from. And the interesting component is that when we collapse our identity, our who we are with what we do and what we have, from the point of view of, say, our expertise, we then put ourselves in a competitive marketplace with everyone else who has similar expertise. And so we now have that particular strain on our life where we're trying to pitch our expertise in a particular way, trying to say my expertise is better than your expertise or whatever the frame is in a marketplace. However, if you show up as an expression of your uniqueness, there is no competition for that. They can't get a Margie anywhere else. And Margie happens to have not only that expertise, but Margie has the essence of Margie that makes her delivery of that expertise distinctly original. And that's what's going to make it make the difference. It is not the expertise itself. You know, going back to the last session, all we have to do is put a topic into Google search and find out in short order how many entries there are, millions of entries about pretty much any particular topic,
right,
within seconds.
But you know what comes up then is if we don't craft our marketing message in a way to attract the people that we most want to work with, then we're not going to attract them in the first place.
And what's going to craft that marketing message in the most individual way possible? Except owning your uniqueness. So that when the website is built, it is congruent with who I would expect to meet and play with. Does that make sense? It's not just the keywords that help the SEO search. Those help it, but it's the combination of all of that, which is a reflection of the uniqueness of you.
True.
Yeah. And so the other aspects of that is that, and I want to reverse the assumptions. The assumptions around that we want to attract the people we want to work with.
Mm.
Now, here's the difference, that we want to so fully express ourselves and reveal ourselves that the people who want to work with that can see it easily and clearly and are drawn to it like a boat in a harbor being drawn to a particular light in the range of the spectrum. because they see it so brilliantly and so clearly. That's what they come for. So instead of us seeking to be the authors of the attraction, perhaps if we are simply the expression of ourselves in true brilliance, then anyone looking for that light can find it. How does that shift the game of putting ourselves out there?
That completely opens it up without having to worry about, saying this particular word or that particular word. It's just putting ourselves out there.
Mm-hmm. And the interesting thing about the whole SEO arms race, which is what I look at it from, the point of view of the SEO arms race.
Really?
Okay, which is, okay, now I'm going to do my Google Analytics. I'm going to go over there. I'm going to do my due diligence and go, oh, yeah, this keyword, leadership transformation. It's getting X number of hits in searching, not too many, but not
right.
too few.
Yeah, which
makes it a highly competitive niche or
right.
a highly marketable
yeah.
niche. And however, what is everybody else doing?
The same thing.
The same thing. And then what's that going to do to that particular niche languaging?
It's
going to
move it to the margin.
It's going to move it to the margin. And then the other thing is that there is such a proliferation of search engine optimization marketing out there with all of the tools of it, uh-huh. right, that everything that people are – they're training everybody. People are all being trained on this stuff. And what's that doing? Leveling the playing field. The one thing, and this is why I'll go back to this time and again, the one thing that people cannot compete with is your uniqueness in its fullest expression. Because they don't have that. So the interesting frame of this all is to challenge even the constructs. And especially around things like marketing. Listen, people used to think direct mail was the key. And then it became like nobody wants to do that because it's so slow and it's cumbersome and all that sort of stuff. And then guess what? In a retro fashion, it became interesting again.
It's coming back, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you take a look at it and you go, okay, what feels like me? Well, certainly one of the things that feels like me is provocative topics. Because I can do that all day long, both hands tied behind my back. And are there other people who do that? Yes. Are they going to do it with the same flavor? No. Because they're not going to combine the language that I'm going to use. Because of the way I'm built to surf the web, surf many different topics in a Renaissance fashion, be as equally interested in Celtic mythology as I am in the biology of how things mutate. Which means then that any time I have a blog, it's going to have references in it that nobody would put together. Now, will I sprinkle in some keywords? Yes. Will those keywords help me? Maybe. So this is the start here. So, thank you, Margie. It was a great opening. Let me check in with one more person and let's keep moving. What was your experiment, or who are you without that fusion? What are your challenges? Or even just out of that particular dialogue and conversation, what just popped or resonated for you? What got poked?
This is Susan. I have one
mm-hmm.
kind of popped out now and relates to what you're talking about. I tend to believe that I'm blind to who I truly am.
Mm-hmm.
I'm always looking for myself, but only see a mirror, or always looking for my voice, waiting to see what's my voice. So just sitting here now trying to I realize I can't really yet even be without that belief, but I can let go of those two senses. Like, so I'm not going to be able to tell who I am by my sight or sound. but how about opening up to my heart and to my intuition?
Mm.
And that seems to relate to the question of what feels like me. It's like, okay, I'm blind, I'm deaf, but what feels like me? You know, what's my heart drawing me to?
Yes. And for everyone on the call, and David, we had a conversation about this briefly in Denver. One of the places to look, not that there aren't many, when I'm doing the be yourself or die someone else work, this is where it shows up. But one of the places to look is, what are the conversations that you would have all day long? There's something thematically in those. If you could have conversations all day long with clients, and you are, with people or subjects or topics that you'd have all day long, there's something that's flagging something in you. Because otherwise, you wouldn't be continually either researching that topic or having that conversation or be drawn to messages on the news or the internet about that particular thing that now become woven into the conversation in a more present time topical fashion. There's something in you that gravitates.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like the heavy metal core of your planet going, I'm drawing this kind of conversation to me. And I love it when I'm in it.
Mm.
And that's part of the expression of you. Is that useful?
Yes, very.
Cool. Okie doke. Let's keep moving. So the key agilities. And here's the word agility. The power of moving quickly and easily. Nimbleness. It's a wonderful word. These particular agilities is about having the presence of that, that your sensing acuity moves that quickly and easily, that your provocative inquiry has a nimbleness to it, that saying what is going to have a kind of agility about it. So these are some of the tools, and I actually, instead of using this link that is down there, don't worry about copying that link, what I'm going to do is I'm going to present the MP3s of these techniques and PDFs of these techniques and put them up on the member area so that you can just download those directly. Because I have recordings of each of the MP3s that I'm going to present for you out of these techniques, as well as a PDF version of the definitions of these things and a little bit more information about them. So what I'd like to do at this point in time is just do a very quick gap exercise, which is, you know, similar to a centering exercise, but this is the an experience piece, and this is going to be part of the process of subtracting the frictors. So I'm going to invite everybody to just close your eyes, unless you're driving. If you're driving, do not do this exercise. If you're operating heavy machinery or sharp objects, okay, be self-responsible. Okay, so close your eyes, and as you close your eyes, you'll probably notice some things. You may notice that your sense of hearing is a little bit heightened. Either my voice will be a little bit more present, or sounds in your own background may be a little bit more present. There's nothing to do about that. Just notice that that's part of the phenomenon. This is what happens when you close your eyes. The second thing you may notice is that your sense of touch, wherever you are, might be slightly heightened. If you were in a breeze, you might feel that. You might feel more cold right now. You might feel more heat. You might be aware of where your body is touching an object, like the arms of a chair, where your legs are crossed, etc., if that's what's going on. Again, nothing to do about that, except notice that that's what happens when we take our eyes offline. You'll also notice that we have thoughts, and lots of them. And these thoughts come across our frame almost like clouds in front of a blue sky on a partially cloudy day. So you'd see one thought cloud go in front of the sky. And I'm just going to invite you, again, to just notice. Nothing to do about them. You don't have to try and push them aside or control or manage them. Just notice that that's what happens. You have thoughts. And maybe just take a few seconds here to notice some of the thoughts, because they're fairly quick. And you might even have thoughts about noticing the thoughts. And now, if you allow yourself, you'll also notice that those thoughts arise out of a background of silence, in much the same way that the clouds are present in a background of blue sky. The sky is always there. It's in the background, not in the foreground, and we tend to notice the clouds more than we notice the sky. But if you allow yourself, you can shift your awareness to noticing the silence a bit more than the thoughts, almost like using a camera to bring the background into the foreground. Not that the thoughts are going to go away, but they may just fade into the background as you notice the silence that they're born from more and more. And as you're noticing that silence, you may also have a kind of experience in that space of silence. You may notice that it's alive, although it's not active. What are some of the other words that occur to you in experiencing that silence? Anyone?
Calm.
Calm.
Serenity.
Serenity.
Peace.
Peace.
Letting go.
Letting go.
Centered.
Centered. Yep. I'm going to invite you to continue experiencing that. Yes, go ahead.
Tranquility.
Tranquility, yes. Keep experiencing that silence. And if you notice your mind going back and grabbing the thoughts, just allow it to do that and then just shift the awareness back into the background where the thoughts come from. You don't have to ignore the thoughts. They're always going to be there. But we're just simply shifting the locus of the focus, so to speak. And I have a question for you all. In this experience of that silence, which you may also notice is fairly vast, is there any sense of anything missing in you? Are you in any way incomplete in that experience of that fullness? Okay, so now I'm just going to ask you to sort of gently, slowly bring yourself back into the experience of the physical objects in the room. And you'll notice that that experience will linger a little bit as we continue our conversation. But you may also notice that over the course of the call, at any given time, you can access that experience. You don't necessarily have to close your eyes. With practice, you'll be able to access that place of centeredness and serenity and tranquility and calm and peace. So let me ask you, if you were to coach, if you were to source provocation from here, from that place, how do you think that would affect what it is that you're doing?
Be much more powerful.
And what would contribute to that?
The focus, the calm, the serenity from which we come.
You would also be very present in the moment.
Yes.
With you'd, the person that you're with.
Yep. You would be very present. Who else?
Yeah, I'm thinking that you'd have access to the vastness of things, so your expertise wouldn't be the problem. It would be more of just being open to accessing everything that's available.
Yes. Nice way to put that. Yeah, you've just opened the portal, so to speak. You're no longer experiencing yourself as coach, as container, but doorway through which the coaching gets put into words. If you were coaching from there, would you have any concern about how the coaching was going to turn out or how you were going to say things and possibly upset somebody?
Mm-mm.
No.
I had that issue this morning, first call with a client. And Steve here, by the way. I was getting into, you know, had the mindset at one point that I had to perform. And I had to quickly, it's a terrible place to be. it's just, and then I just said, Steve, you know, I just let it slide off of you and just put it right back in the client's lap. So, but it, that usually happens to me on the first call of the client.
Well, let's see what we can do over the course of these next 7-8 weeks of having that be absent so that it never shows up at the first call of the client again. Would that be cool?
That would be peachy.
Be peachy. Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting that, you know, performance does come into play in coaching, you know, especially early on in the game, and especially when we're charging, and especially when we're charging a lot of money. Seems that the higher up the economic scale, the more we feel compelled to demonstrate value via performance. Which then puts the onus of the results on us. I have to be this magical coach that creates this transformation. Which is a different frame than this client has come to use me and everything that I have learned and done and shifted within me as the mechanism whereby they source their own transformation. Completely different. You know, if you think of the coach as flashlight, just for example, what makes the flashlight useful? Well, picking it up, turning it on, and shining it at things. And that's what the client does if they're using the coach. But if the coach thinks that they have to create the value, they're busy over there going, I have to pick myself up, turn myself on, and shine the light on all these sorts of things. And the client's got nothing to do with it. I even have to put myself in his hand and show him and tell him where to point. It'd be kind of silly, wouldn't it? All you have to do is show up and be the best flashlight you can. You know, with as bright a light, as focused or concentrated or expansive as it needs to be. One that when accessed and called to do the job that it needs to do, then it does that. This is why results aren't in the hands of the coach, really. It's that if the client doesn't pick up the flashlight and use it, well, it doesn't matter how good the flashlight is. It could be top-of-the-line flashlight. But if they're not using it to shine where it needs to go, it doesn't matter. So that experience, by the way, was called the GAP. It stands for a greater awareness place. You have a greater awareness of self, of sense of self, and actually of the scope and vastness of everything that's really contributing to the moment. That's a baseline experience, by the way, because often with the other experiences of the C technique, the weight technique, the core technique, Sanyaman, a couple of others, what happens is that when you yourself use it or when you use it with other clients, which, by the way, you will also be able to do with this stuff, when you use it with them, that's where they're going to go too, is that same kind of experience. And when you look to absence something, say it's a particular emotional set or a mindset, when it is absenced, then that's also an experience that will be similar to what it is that happens when you get there. So you now have a touch point, an experience that can that you can hold as a benchmark and go, oh yeah, I recognize that. Any questions at this moment?
Mm-mm.
Cool. And by the way, when your questions come from that GAP experience, they're much more likely to be honed in to who people are and what they're up to than they do from our brain, which is, it's kind of like going to the local library for the books that don't have connection to the internet versus going to the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And going to the library of libraries, so to speak. Very, very different. Okay. Pleasant.
Can I just throw in one thing too, Michael? This is Shirley.
Sure. Yeah.
That just requires... well, being able to allow yourself to go to that place, but also trust comes up, you know, the question of trust and how able am I to truly be open and trusting not only of the person I'm coaching and the coaching experience, but trust myself and to just allow everything to unfold as it can if you're in that place of awareness.
Yes, that would seem to be a factor in it. But if I might, I'd like to poke at trust for a moment. Is that okay?
Yes, please.
Okay. And again, what you're going to hear is that, you know, when you start working for masterful provocation, you start to poke at lots of things just to challenge and see how it fits, not because you're right about it. However, with trust, as with most of the human emotional intellectual combinations like forgiveness and trust and a few others, they are the human beings, at least up till now, best attempt at working around a particular issue. And what I mean by that is the issue that they're working around is the illusion of separateness. And they're doing their best. However, when you're in the experience of connectedness to everything. There is nothing to trust or not trust, because you know it for what it is. In the same way that on the sort of like earth level, if you're in a complete experience of connectedness to a tiger, you don't have to trust or not trust what it's going to do. Trust tends to come from us not being deeply connected to our natural knowing. We're more connected to our intellectual or emotional constructs. And then we're trying to use those to evaluate whether or not I can make myself vulnerable. When you come from natural knowing, you know whether or not you can make yourself vulnerable or not. So it's not a question of can I trust myself. The whole framework of trust is irrelevant. The question is, am I deeply connected with natural knowing, which comes from way beyond me in the first place? And if you are connected, and I'll use this phrase, you can use your own, oneness, source, God, the quantum information field, collective consciousness, I don't care what the label is. But if you're deeply connected, no. If you are experiencing the deep connection with that, because you can't be disconnected from it. If you're experiencing that connection, experiencing the connection of oneness, how could you not know whether or not something was or wasn't trustworthy? You wouldn't need trust. You would just know what is. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. And thank you, because you help give me a framework from which to view this, because what I said, I realized, is not what I meant. So that was perfect. Thank you for filling in the gap.
You're welcome. You're welcome. And I actually had that recognition a few years ago, because I spent a lot of time in trust. Now, in the interim context with a client, it's useful to use trust and the language of trust and that kind of thing, because it is valuable to recognize that in our experience, we need to know how to what the true nature of things is. And so trust in that context becomes a completely different word. Like, I can trust a sheep to do this. I can trust a tiger to do that. I can trust a fish to do that. I can trust a pine tree to be this way. Now, in that context, when I use the word trust, I'm actually just saying my natural knowing is informing the truth of what that is, which is different than I feel it in danger, but I'm going to try and make myself not feel in danger by trusting it. Get the difference in how the word trust applies then?
Yes.
Cool. So here we are in presence, and this is really crucial. This is where masterful provocation comes from. It's a presence of ease and grace. It's a sense of knowing what, when, how, where, and even if to poke something. And for want of a better phrase, it's the ever-present background of intelligent energy that is the source, and sensed and known while living the daily moments of life. We feel it. And even, again, I'll go to the litany of language about it, even if it's the quantum information field, the collective consciousness, the force, pure awareness, God, I don't care what the label is for it. We all sense it and feel it and know it. And it's always there in the background. In much the same way, your experience of the gap, it's always there in the background. Whether or not we're experiencing our connection with it is something different. But if you look at the notion of oneness, is it possible that there can be anything outside it? if one languages from the point of view of the word God, and God is always described as omnipresent, meaning everywhere, then everywhere is everywhere. There is nothing outside everywhere. And this is where masterful provocation comes from, because this source is calling into the moment in a conversation with a client what is needed in that conversation. As long as the channel, the passage, the avenue is open. But if the street's filled with cars and trucks and all sorts of other stuff, then not much is going to come down that road, except maybe a bicycle and the odd pedestrian. This is one of the first places to get to. This is where all of the agilities are also present. So here are some of the frictors to presence. And as you go through and revisit this over the next week, I'm going to be presenting these four agilities and some of their frictors. What I'm going to do is also ask you to consider having an experience of absencing them. Okay, and we'll be focusing on these for the next few weeks in the background of the other topics we're using. Some of the frictors to presence with a client, just these questions. What if they fire me? If I'm masterfully provoking and then they fire me because I have, or I'm afraid they won't like me, or I have to be tough on them, which is going to then inform an attitude. Or I'm not good enough to coach yet. Or what if I'm wrong? These are just some of them. And we'll be subtracting those through various use of the tools of the gap, the core, the C, and even weight. Okay? So, next plate. Sensing acuity. This is the next agility. This is the keenness of sense perception. Great definition. Which is, by the way, the definition of acuity by itself. Not making this stuff up. Keenness of sense perception that goes beyond what the intellect perceives in the moment. And you've all had this experience. This is why I say these things are present in you naturally. You've all had the experience of all of a sudden going, wow, I just know this. I know it in my body. I know it in my being. You don't know how you know it. You might even try to gravitate towards some kind of intellectual backing up of evidence. Oh, I know it because. You know, body language functions this way. Body language looks like it is giving you the information, and what's really happening with body language is that it is simply reinforcing the information your being has already gotten nanoseconds beforehand. And you're getting the visual evidence of that. But your being already got pinged like your computer got pinged. You already got that. You already knew that. It's just that we're not as attuned to the level of that natural knowing as is useful. So we tend to gravitate toward external mechanical means like reading body language. But if that person has their arms folded, which is typically called a defensive position, and their back is to you, you sense that defensiveness already. You walk into a room, you sense whether or not anger has been there. With a client, it goes beyond just listening to what's spoken, even though listening is one of those agility kinds of things. This is, or not agility, competencies. It's what your intuition and natural knowing is making known to you. I have a radar screen up there. It's like you're getting this sense of it, and it's got this beep, 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 beep. And it's letting you know that X issue, X emotion, X challenge, or whatever it is on the radar screen, even when you don't have the intellectual justification for it or explanation for why it's there or why you know it. Nevertheless, it's there. And this is the really interesting thing about it, is that sensing acuity is timeless. When you're fully open from that place, like in the gap, when you're fully open and experiencing everything from there, You can feel in the moment with a person the simultaneous presence of past, future, and present, and how all of those things seem to be melding and meshing in this particular moment, how the past has been historically informing the present, how the future is informing the present based on where it is that people seek to be going, how all of that's happening. This is a great agility. Here are some of the frictors to it. How do I know if what I'm getting is right? I'm afraid they'll disagree, then what? Or the agendas that we've been trained in. I have to follow what they said. Or this one, which is often there, I can't trust my gut instinct. One of the reasons for that is that we've had so many experiences with what has masqueraded as our gut instinct that we have disempowered our ability to connect with it. And then the other one is, I don't feel anything. I don't know what I'm getting. Well, guess what? When that's what you're getting, that's what you're getting.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're in a client conversation and you're going, I'm not getting anything here, guess what? That's what's happening. You're not getting anything right there. You're not, and that in and of itself is telling. You're not getting any passion. You're not getting any challenge. You're not getting any desire. You're not getting any fear. You're not getting anything. Sometimes it's useful simply to reflect that. You know, I'm not just not getting anything here. And then seeing where that takes you. Here's another agility. This one's called provocative inquiry, which is asking the question or provocation of most depth as required by the moment. And there's some aspects to this that are important. Having the capacity to language the provocation keenly, meaning sharply, with an edge, with precision, or in a more general fashion with the scope and range of vision as needed. Sometimes we need to be talking about asking questions about great depth and meaning, and sometimes we need to come in like a scalpel. The question comes from a natural knowing that discerns which one of those is appropriate at the time. You know, you don't want to be using a Hubble telescope when a scalpel is what's necessary. And then, most importantly, it is about surfacing what needs to be known, which is what's the iceberg below the surface. And if we remember, we take a look at the image of the Titanic and that sort of thing, it was not the iceberg they could see that sank the Titanic. It was the iceberg that was underneath the surface that they couldn't see.
Mm-hmm.
These are some of the frictors. I suck at asking questions. I'm afraid I'll piss them off. That one is often there. I'm uncertain if my question will work. And that one comes from, I have to know that it's going to be a good question ahead of time. Really? Why? As a master provocative inquirer, I have to make them grow. So now that sounds like an onerous burden. And then what if my question is too harsh? If that kind of question and any other versions of these kinds of things, any of your own personal ones, you know, that one in particular, what if my question is too harsh? If your question is too harsh, let me ask you this. How are you holding your client? Are they a fragile, delicate flower that's going to be broken by a question? If they are, and you're perceiving them that way, then perhaps they are not a coaching client. If they aren't, and you're perceiving them that way, then you are disempowering them. And if they are, and you're not seeing them that they are, then you're missing something you need to know. So in any of those cases, it's always in the coach's hands, which goes back to presence. And here we go. Saying what is. Speaking the truth, speaking from the truth of what is without opinion, judgment, interpretation, as if reporting. Emperor's new clothes, great example. Mommy, he's not wearing any clothes. There's no judgment about it, it's just an observation. Saying what is. We're not looking at the distinction between my truth, their truth, and the truth. There is a recognition of that those three things are different. However, a pine tree is a pine tree is a pine tree. We have some challenges to saying what is, because we've had the saying what is notion beaten out of us in much the same way the innocence of children have had it beaten out of them. Telling the truth has never worked before. I'm afraid they won't accept me if I tell the truth. I have to save them with my solution, which means I'm going to impose my truth on them. And this is one of the big ones. I don't want to hurt their feelings. This goes back to that element in the session one, which is the recognition that you're not hurting their feelings. If their feelings are already hurt, you're pointing to the fact that their feelings are hurt. You're pulling the curtain back and going, guess what? That's a sunburn you got there. This is how I know. See what happens when I touch you? And the other one, I don't want to rock the boat. Yeah. That's like trying to keep everything safe. So, your job, I have one that I'm going to assign for you, which is to go through that, those four agilities, and if there isn't a frictor that's already there that you have identified, then find one that you get the spirit of. What keeps you from the natural full expressions of that agility? What keeps you from the natural full expression of having a deep question or saying what is? What keeps you from sensing, from in that moment knowing where to go? What keeps you from it? And then we'll get to the business of subtracting it. So, here's the questions. What's staying with you? What are you going to do with what you have now out of today? And what's the practice that is most challenging for you? And you can answer any one of these. And I'd like to hear from everyone on at least one. So let's rock.
Hey, Michael, it's David.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say for me, since I don't have very many clients, there's a client where it feels like coaching is complete and they still want to do the calls, or it feels like it, or they like you being there and maybe listening to them to not be able to speak to them and say, hey, maybe coaching is done here, to follow that hit.
That's an interesting one. And simultaneously,
yeah.
I invite you to see what it is that you're not sensing that may be behind the picture that is something that is coachable. So both may be true.
Got it.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you'll find that a lot of what I'll present is that often you'll find that there's a both and that's at play.
Both and. Right.
Yep. Far more than an either or, which invariably has us come down on the side of which one is right. You know? Cool.
Or maybe that having that conversation will elicit something.
There you go.
Well. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Who else?
This is Sherry. I have an example of this today. I did a complimentary coaching session, and the woman said that she was going to be interviewing two other coaches, and right away I sensed myself being worried about what I was going to ask because I was thinking about the end result of her hiring me. And if I wouldn't have even thought that she was interviewing other coaches, I never would have, I would have been different. I would have been more in the present, and I wouldn't have been afraid. I mean, like, I just noticed I changed a little bit.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Exactly. And so from that frame, and that's something to certainly subtract, from that frame, you couldn't hear what was going to be best for that moment, regardless of whether or not she was going to hire you.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because it was busy being trying to tunneled into what is it that I can do that will get her to hire me.
Right.
Yep. That's called the WOLF, which is an acronym for what one listens for. Well, I'm listening for whatever it is that I can hear that will be the thing that if I get that, then they'll hire me. Yeah, what if this isn't a person for you?
Mm-hmm.
Cool. So we'll look at subtracting that. Who else?
This is Margie.
I think what's
probably going to be most challenging for me is, and this goes up with when you were giving the example last week about the rock band, is what comes up for me is feeling like I'm being too harsh when I'm doing the provocative inquiry.
Mm, right. You mean the question, can you afford the arrogance of thinking that there is nothing out there that you could learn that would help you get what you want in your career?
Yeah, because, you know, what comes up for me just from that question is, like, they would just completely shut down and not even move forward.
Right, they might temporarily. However, if they do completely shut down, then you realize that the identification with that is far bigger than is available for you to address. And that gets you information. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
That they are so attached to that way of being that no matter what you do, you're going to be like trying to drag somebody kicking and screaming to success.
Okay, gotcha. So then nothing lost anyway.
Exactly. See, if we're not willing to lose a client, we can't coach them.
Yeah.
Mm. I know that's a scary thing. But
hey, you know,
nevertheless.
I've gone through that already lately.
Yes. Cool. Mm. Who else?
This is Steve. I'm going to revise my initial remarks in regards to my challenge. So,
okay.
It's not, I'm not sure if it's the whole idea on the first call having to perform. It's more of most people, when they come to coaching, they've never experienced it, so they don't know what it is. But they think that it's somebody that's going to tell them what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And where I'm coming from on the first call is, and I explained to them, this is going to take a couple of months. You know, I actually say that.
Yeah.
Give this a couple of months. Give this a couple of months to see what this experience is all about. It's going to be different and than anything you've ever experienced before.
Right.
And it's coming from that standpoint of trying to explain, or maybe not explain, but what am I trying to say? You know, trying to show them really what I can't get out of my own way here. Trying to show or demonstrate maybe too much as far as what coaching is.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of just being in the present and just be a great coach for them.
Which is probably the most powerful demonstration, isn't it?
It is. Yes, it is. Just coach the crap out of them, you know?
Coach them within an inch of their life.
I think that's
the new marketing
niche.
But you know what I mean? I have that mindset, but then you've got the mindset, but they're expecting someone to tell them what to do. Because I had on a complimentary consultation, I asked them if they ever experienced coaching before, and they talked about, you know, like a sports coach.
Okay, so I'm going to shortcut this one, but I do want to come back to and hold in the background that there is there's an emotional intellectual construct that's informing all of this. But in the shortcut version here, ask them what they're expecting.
And that's what I did.
Yeah. So there you go. So when you ask them, what are you expecting out of coaching, and how are you expecting the process to go?
That's where I went. I asked them, you know, for how long we're going to work together, be a partner together. What does success look like for you?
Okay. Can you hold for just a second? Hi, there's somebody in the background who's like trying to make a radio out of paper clips and gum wrappers and things like that. If you could just either mute or just realize that your microphone is very sensitive. So we're hearing MacGyver. Okay. Thank you. Okay. So, yeah.
That's where I went.
You're right on it, Steve.
Yeah, and I got that actually working with you. So what will be different? What will be different by us working together?
Yeah. What will be different? What do you expect? How are you expecting? What are you expecting me to do? You know, what are you expecting me to do? How do you expect me to end it? Are you expecting that I'm going to ask you questions? Are you expecting that I'm going to give you a whole bunch of advice? What are you expecting?
Yeah.
And if we just cleanly communicate that and find out, then now we know, and so do they. Mm-hmm. And that gives you the opportunity to go, hey, sorry. You know, I don't do that. Or, yeah, that seems like it's in the ballpark. I had a person ask me, he said, I want somebody to hold my feet to the fire, and I'm going, I don't do that. First, it doesn't sound like a comfortable image. You know? And I don't want to do that even virtually, let alone in person. And they said, you know, well, I need somebody to hold me accountable. I said, you already are accountable. Let's find out what's keeping you from using that ability in every situation to the degree that you want to use it. I said, but I'm not your mom. I went, oh, I thought that's what coaches did. I said, well, some do, not this one.
Mm.
If that's what you want, okay. I'm not the one.
Mm.
So who else? Thank you, Steve.
Thank you.
This is Susan.
Yes.
One of the things that's sticking with me is, and I'm wanting to explore more within myself, is that you are not, that you are a portal, not a container. And
mm-hmm.
I've always seen myself actually as, or seen the coaching relationship as a container that, you know, creates a space that slows people down enough so they can really be their full self in the presence of somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just curious about, I love the idea of portal too, but I don't see it as is not a container. So that one I've got to sit with, I think.
Yes, a portal has structure and a frame around it, but it doesn't hold, which means the portal also doesn't have a limit. A container has a limit.
Mm.
You know? And then that means that one has to attempt regularly to expand the parameters of the container.
Mhm.
It's even in the notion of, like, I want to get outside the box. Okay, the box is an intellectual construct that there is a box in the first place. The universe is infinitely creative. If I stop seeing myself as a box in the first place, maybe I'd have access to that infinite creativity.
Mhm.
Okay, so I don't have to get outside a box.
Yeah.
Cool.
Good. Thanks.
Who's next? Herminia, did I hear you before? You
yes,
still there?
I'm here.
Hi.
Yes. Hi. Yeah. To me, what stays with me is the same thing as the last speaker. It's about the being a, as a coach, being a portal. And what I see as a vision is, as a portal, it's like an entry to, or a gateway to the superhighway of coaching and knowing of self or awareness.
Yeah.
So.
And the concept is a challenge for most of us from the point of view of ego, meaning we want to consider ourselves as source of the coaching. So one of the first things we have to subtract is the idea that the coaching is from us, that it actually comes through us.
Yes.
And it is shaped or flavored, rather, by us because of the uniqueness of what we were built for. So we're the flavoring, not the source. Does that make give you a different image?
Yes.
Yeah.
And thank you.
You're welcome. Molly, how about you? What's hanging around out there?
Well, not too much. I think the gap exercise is really what it's all about, because when you can be in that state, your listening becomes much better. Your questioning is right there. And you're fully present, so that your mind is not wondering. You're engaged with that client, and then you allow whatever it is to flow through. And you really don't know what's going to happen until the time comes. So the only frictor for me is, you know, the questions are a concern, but that will work itself out. So
mm-hmm.
I don't really have anything there that's bugging me right now.
Cool. Well, that recognition that the gap is a great place to be and coach from is a great way to start any coaching session, which is to give yourself the moment of experience of the gap before you go in. And if you get lost, especially when you get good with the gap exercise, you'll be able to do it with your eyes open. If you happen to get lost, you might simply say to a client in the middle of the session and go, can we just hold for a minute? I just need to connect here. And we tend not to say that stuff because we tend to think that if we're not in some sort of constant dialogue with people, that we're not doing our job. But sometimes space is one of the most important things that we can bring to a session. And especially if we find ourselves getting hooked somewhere and we're going off base, it's really useful for us to take the time and own it. Because of what we're modeling being engaged in the process on a spontaneous minute-by-minute basis.
You know,
so cool,
I don't think that this is a one-time thing. I think this is a way of life, a way it's a constant practice that I have to do in order to keep me grounded where I want to be.
Yes. And what happens, though, the interesting thing about it is that over the course of time, the accumulation of the practice is that it is present in such a powerful way in the background, you come from it regardless of whether or not you're focused on it.
Mm-hmm. It's natural.
Yep, because it's our natural state.
Mm-hmm.
And all we're doing is reinforcing our natural state. Cool. Anyone else? Going once, going twice? Okay. Last slide. And there it is. It's all about heart. We spend a lot of time acquiring information and experience, skills and practice. and all of that sort of stuff. But invariably, and this is the meta version of it all, it is always about the heart coming from unconditional love. And with that frame in mind, as we live from that, which is why, by the way, also that space that's there in the gap, if we are living and coaching and engaging from unconditional love, then when a client presents us with a challenge, we're not sitting going, God, that's the stupidest idea for a business I've ever heard. Or they're going, I just can't seem to follow through on something. We're not going, oh, God, what's wrong with them? We're just going, oh, okay, I get it. That's where they are. And I hear that they're seeking a shift from that. And so I'm going to engage with them from the place of unconditional love for where they are and, both and, where they seek to be. Without a judgment about either, that it is better or worse. And that allows us to presence masterful provocation. The provocation that is being called for by the moment, not by our ideas about how we're supposed to perform or where they are supposed to go or what we are supposed to do. Any questions or anything that anyone wants to say here at close?
I think that's the most powerful statement of the entire night. It's all about heart.
Yep. I agree.
I appreciate all of you for being in this adventure with me. It's a privilege to be in a gathering of people for whom something like this slide has been sourced, because I see that y'all have called this slide into being more than me. Once again, I've just been vehicle. And so to be in the presence of other people for whom there is truth in this slide is a privilege. So thank you all for playing, and we'll see you all next week, ready to go.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Michael.
Okay.
Thanks,
Michael.
Bye.
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 Thank you, Michael.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, everyone. Bye, Molly.
Bye, Hermedia. Bye-bye.
Okay.